We love to have kids engaged. We love to have kids a part of our life. We think that if the only thing that we do with them is send them to their own little place and there's never any interaction with other generations, we think something is lost in that. So today, kiddos are with us. Hang in there. I'm going to try and do the best I can to be, number one, as brief as I can, which is always my goal, but I especially mean it today. And also a little interactive. You found things on your chair, no doubt. If you haven't grabbed a pen or you don't have one on your person, there are lots on the table in the back. You're going to need one, I think. So feel free to just get up and get one. It's no problem. While you're doing that, does anybody have a bulletin I can borrow? Anyone have a bulletin? Thank you, Kevin. If you didn't grab one of these, we would certainly encourage you to do so, especially because there is this kind of highlighted box on the bulletin, the square, with some information about the new Hispanic church that is starting in this building in just like 4 weeks, 5 weeks, something like that. Easter morning, however far away Easter still is, they're having their first public worship service. And that's in here, but there's also ways that we, a church plant ourselves, not that long ago, are going to come alongside of them and help them get off the ground. Some of you were actually here in the very, very beginning. You can look around and see a few of those faces. And some of you maybe have been a part of a church plant before. It's tough going at first, or can be, because you don't have a community. Right? There's nobody yet gathered to do anything. And so we're going to come alongside of Alas in some really tangible ways. We'll have more information on that next week. I didn't mean to steal this from you. Oh, my gosh. All right. So there's some things. Grab one of those if you haven't already. We're in John 12 today. If you want to grab a Bible, you're welcome to do that. We'll get there in just a moment. I want to start out by telling you that as a kid growing up, I did a lot of baking. I did. I know, surprising, right? Not cooking. Cooking involves creativity and freedom. That's not me. I prefer rules, set defined measurements, you know, strict instructions on how long things should stay in the oven. Baking was right up my alley. And so, you know, breads, rolls, croissants. Not croissants, that was Pillsbury territory. But cookies, you know, I baked a fair amount. I remember early on going to town one day, baking oatmeal chocolate chip cookies, some of my favorite, and mixing all the ingredients together, following the instructions very carefully in the bowl, taking a few, you know, licks, because that's what you get to do when you're cooking. Yes, exactly, baking, thank you. You know, it tastes great, looks great. Stick them on the sheet, throw them in the oven. 10 minutes later, I pull it out, and instead of cookies, I have these amorphous blobs. Now, you bakers among us, what ingredient did I leave out? Yeah, baking soda or baking powder. Yep. Because those two ingredients, they create carbon dioxide, which creates air in what you are making, which makes this thing rise. It gives it height and depth, and I somehow completely missed that ingredient. I still ate them, for the record, but, you know, it just wasn't quite the same. And I share that story because there is an aspect of being a disciple. There's an ingredient that, if missing, I think ends up causing our whole lives to kind of fall flat. But if you have this ingredient, if this characteristic is present in your life, then just like a good baked cookie or loaf of bread, your life has height and depth to it. Henry, I got to tell you, I'm going to love you being in this morning. Yes. And you should. You should. And you know what? Moms and dads love it when kids help. Ruby is the same way. And Ruby is about your age. Ruby is always getting a stool out and she's always at the counter. How can I help? How can I help? And as a dad, and I bet your dad would say the same thing, I love it. I love it when my kids give me a hand. So I don't remember what I was saying, but I do love that point. And maybe we should just head down. Maybe the sermon should change and just talk about service. It's not what I prepared, though. So there's this thing, right, this ingredient, this characteristic, that if we don't have it, our lives, I think, fall flat. If we do have it, we have a height and a depth to life. And that characteristic, that trait of being a disciple, is joy. Joy. When the Bible paints a picture of a follower of Jesus, a disciple, a Christian, when it shows us what that looks like, almost inevitably joy is included, or it's not far away from the description. Time and time again, we see it. In fact, I want to show you this verse from Galatians 5. You may know this. This is the fruit of the Spirit passage. And it's a list of characteristics that would be common to find in a disciple of Jesus. If you are a disciple, these things would be present in your life, the Bible says. So the Holy Spirit produces this kind of fruit in our lives. Love, and then what? Joy. And a list of other really important things. But joy's right there. Look at this next passage. It's not going to make much sense without a little bit of context. Jesus has a group of disciples, not just the 12. There's a larger group, actually. Did you know this? That traveled around with Jesus. At least 72 of them. And one time in Luke, Jesus sends the 72 out in pairs to the neighboring towns and villages with two jobs. Tell the people that the kingdom of God has come near. It's available. And bring healing wherever you go. And so the disciples in pairs go out and they do what Jesus tells them to do. They do the work of a disciple and they come back, and this is what it says. The 72 returned with what? With joy. In other words, doing the work that Jesus gives us to do brings joy. It's supposed to, anyway. And then this one, we're going to get here in a couple of weeks, John 15. This is the vine and branches passage. Just ring any bells. I'm the vine, you are the branches, abide in me. And Jesus is talking about this relationship that we're to have. And if we have this relationship with him, if we're connected to him like a branch to a vine, then we produce fruit. And Jesus gets kind of midway through this teaching and he says, I've told you all this. I've talked about vines and branches because so that my joy may be in you and that your joy may be complete or overflowing. And we could go on and on. Just a quick little survey to kind of help us realize, if we didn't already, that joy is fundamental to being a disciple of Jesus. And we're going to see that as we read the first part of chapter 12. So you got your Bibles? Otherwise, you can just listen along. It's no problem. We're marching through the Gospel of John. We've been doing it for almost 3 months. Yeesh. We're going to wrap up the week after Easter, I think. Chapter 12 is our chapter for this week, and we're just going to read the first 13 verses, because that will be plenty. Do you remember what happened in chapter 11, by the way? Yeah, Lazarus. Dude who was dead in the tomb for 4 days. Stinky Lazarus, right? Gets raised from the dead. All right, that's chapter 11. Now chapter 12. 6 days before the Passover, Jesus came back to Bethany, where Lazarus lived, whom Jesus had raised from the dead. Here, a dinner was given in Jesus' honor. Martha served, while Lazarus was among those reclining at the table with him. Then Mary took about a pint of pure nard, an expensive perfume. She poured it on Jesus' feet and wiped his feet with her hair, and the house was filled with the fragrance of the perfume. But one of the disciples, Judas Iscariot, who was later to betray Jesus, objected. Hey, why hasn't this perfume been sold and the money given to the poor? It was worth a year's wages. Well, he did not say this because he cared about the poor, but because he was a thief. As keeper of the money bag, he used to help himself to what was put into it. Leave her alone, Jesus replied. It was intended that she should save this perfume for the day of my burial. You will always have the poor among you, but you will not always have me. There's a lot going on there. We're actually not going to talk about it this morning. That's kind of your homework. There you go. A lot happening in that whole interaction with Mary and Judas. And okay, verse 9. Meanwhile, a large crowd of Jews found out that Jesus was there in Bethany and came, not only because of him, but also to see Lazarus, whom he had raised from the dead. So the chief priests made plans to kill Lazarus as well. Hey, why not? You know, one going to kill one, why not kill another? These guys are both a pain in our neck. For on account of him, Lazarus, many of the Jews were going over to Jesus and believing in him. Well, the next day, the great crowd that had come for the festival, the Passover festival, heard that Jesus was on his way to Jerusalem. And they took palm branches and went out to meet him, shouting, "Hosanna! Blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. Blessed is the King of Israel." And we'll stop there. So let's go back to the beginning of this chapter. There's one small little phrase, one sentence that I want to just start with here together, right? It's in verse 2. Jesus has come back to Bethany, and here a dinner was given in Jesus' honor. I want you to imagine the scene for a moment, because that sentence on its own might not mean, I don't know, might not conjure up. So just imagine the scene. Just days earlier, Jesus raised a guy again who had been dead for 4 days. Dead for 4 days. And now he's alive. It's this incredible, incredible miracle. And now, not only is Lazarus alive, but he's up and around. He's talking and eating and laughing and interacting with people. He's living life because he's alive again. So this, I don't think, was just dinner. I think this was a dinner party. And there's a difference. Would you not agree? My son, one of my sons, JP, you back there, buddy? JP turns 7 this week. And we are not throwing him one party. This kid's going to have multiple parties, right? We're gathering with my immediate family today to also celebrate another cousin who's having a birthday. And then we'll have a party on our own as a family. And of course, we're going to have a party because JP's alive. He's alive. And so celebration and joy just kind of spill out of us. Have you ever had this happen with someone you love and their birthday comes up and it's just like, you don't have to think about it. It's just joy. Joy spilling out of you because they're alive and you're so happy that they're alive and you're so happy that you're alive and get to be alive with them. And it's just like life everywhere and there's celebration and joy. Okay? This is a guy who's celebrating Lazarus, a guy who's celebrating a birthday of a different sorts. Would you not agree? Right? Like he's alive again. All over again, he's alive. And so this isn't just a dinner. Hey, could you whip up some mac and cheese? You know, we should probably eat tonight. This is a dinner party. This is a party. Because Lazarus is alive. And joy is just spilling out of them. They can't help it. They can't help it. So they gather everyone together and they get the best food and wine and they line up a musician and they say, tonight, we're going to celebrate. It's joy, joy, joy overflowing out of this little house in Bethany. And then in verse 12, the party goes viral. Before YouTube, I know, but that is exactly what is happening as they're headed into Jerusalem. People are hearing the story of this guy who was dead for 4 days and now is alive. And they're like, what? No way. Hey, did you hear? And they're all starting to come and gather along the road. And there's so much happening here and so much that there's a lot to talk about. I'll trust that for another day. I just want to kind of make the point that the place is erupting with joy. Any of you ever seen the images or the video of World War II veterans coming home to like New York City and there's the parade and people are hanging out of the building windows and throwing confetti and ticker tape and there's bands marching up and down the street and the lines, have you seen, I looked at some this week, 20, 30 deep, people just trying to participate in this thing that's so much joy and they can't help it. It's the only possible reaction to what's happening. The same sort of thing kind of maybe is happening here. It's maybe a helpful analogy to help us understand that as Jesus comes into Jerusalem, this is just party upon party, joy upon joy, because the King, the Rescuer, has finally come. Now, yes, we're in chapter 12, and the previous 11 chapters have been a little difficult at times. It's been near stonings, murderous plots, doubting crowds, major confrontations. You know, it's been a rough road at times, and it's not going to get easy either with what lies ahead. But all throughout, just go back and travel the road that we've traveled from the first miracle at the wedding celebration at Cana to the resurrection, we see joy throughout this gospel because it's fundamental to being a disciple. So here's the question for the morning. If joy is so fundamental to life as a disciple, if it's so central to the Bible and painting this picture of what it means to be a Christian, then why does it seem like joy is so often missing? This is true. I am. You know me too well. It's true. Anger, and that is another sermon for yet another day, Henry. And so I'm with you. And I think that may be part of the reason why maybe there isn't as much joy. I want to have us consider something different. I think there might be another reason why there is often joy missing in our lives, or why it feels that way sometimes. And to get at that, I want to suggest two words. And this is where this sad attempt at a leaf comes in. This is a palm branch. We're going to make it into like a palm leaf. Trust me, it's going to kind of work. But this is where this starts to come in. If you have a pen, if you're feeling adventurous, on one side of this leaf, I want to encourage you to write the word rescuer. Rescuer. And on the other side, somewhere in the middle, the word king. Rescuer and king. Love it. All right. Rescuer King. We'll do a little bit more with that in a moment. I think these two words, if we consider them together for a few minutes, I think can get at why maybe joy isn't often a part of our life. How, in other words, maybe a different way to ask that question is, how do we develop joy? How do we increase the joy that comes in being a disciple? How does that happen? And I think these two words play a part. Let's start with the word rescuer. Think back to the beginning of this chapter. The disciples throw a party. Why?
Because Jesus is back alive.
Almost. Hold that for a couple of weeks. Lazarus is alive. Jesus has rescued Lazarus. And my hunch, just a hunch, no proof of this, it's not in the Bible. My hunch, though, is that when Lazarus came walking out of the tomb, the disciples weren't like, huh, I wonder how we should respond to this event. I don't know, what do you think? What should be our reaction? I don't know, let's consider it together for a while. No, I think it was like pure joy, immediate joy, full, overflowing sorts of joy, because the guy who was dead has been rescued and is now alive. And I think the people on the road to Jerusalem were not having to sit there and ponder their response to the coming of the king. It was just like, look it, the rescuer is coming. We need to be rescued. Seems pretty straightforward. And so out comes joy. See, when we realize our need for rescue and we receive God's rescuing love and mercy, joy begins to flow. A little story to illustrate this. When my wife and I were early on in our marriage, before children, we took a trip to Las Vegas. It was for work. Don't worry. We were very good there. And we were in Vegas, and we went a couple days early so that we could drive to the Grand Canyon. Neither of us had ever been. And the West Rim is the closest part of the Grand Canyon that you can get to. Seemed pretty straightforward. So we decided to drive to the West Rim. What no one told us, well, our concierge tried to warn us, we didn't pay attention, is that the last 3 miles are a dirt road. Well, really a rock road. Well, I mean, it's really like a washed out kind of trail that's a near-death experience if you try and drive it with your rented sedan from Chrysler, which is what we did. We tried to navigate this thing. And sure enough, about halfway down it, we hit a huge rock, smashes the oil pan, and we lose all of our oil in about 100 yards. And so here we are. It's 110. And we're in the middle of the desert now. We haven't seen anybody for a while. And so we get out of the car, because we know you're not supposed to stay in the car, I think. And so we get out, and we hide behind a bush in its shade. And the whole time I'm thinking, we're going to die. We are going to die. The scorpions are going to attack us, and we are going to die. Because scorpions are those kinds of animals. They're very aggressive. It was terrifying, actually, if I'm being honest. I really thought we were in trouble. But after a little bit of waiting, up pulls a car, a two-door red sport car. I kid you not. Lowest profile I've ever seen. And they're like, hey, come on, get in. And we're like, oh my gosh, okay. And so we get in the back of this red little sports car and we're rescued. And the joy is just incredible until I realize that there's this broken down car on the side of the middle of nowhere and we're going to have to tow it back and that's going to cost a fortune. Then we're going to have it repaired and that's going to cost a fortune because we did not get renter's insurance because we were young and foolish that way. And so it was a short-lived joy, but joy nonetheless. We did, however, get rescued again. Our tow truck fee got covered. It's a whole other story. And I remember the joy of that $800 bill being lifted. And later on, there was the joy of the repair being covered. It's a whole other story. And I remember it being just filled with joy because of the fact that we had been rescued again. With every rescue, joy just spilled out. I didn't have to think about it. I didn't have to mull over what my reaction would be. I realized I needed to be rescued. And when rescue came, I couldn't help but be joyful. The same thing is true, I think, as a disciple of Jesus. If we want joy, we first have to admit that we need to be rescued. And there's the hardest part. There, I think, is why joy is so often missing, because we've convinced ourselves that we really don't need to be rescued. We are told every day that we are strong, capable, independent human beings who just need to work harder. We don't need to be rescued. We just need to work hard. Plus, we live in a culture where everything we need and everything we want is a click away. Who needs to be rescued when you live in that kind of a culture, we tell ourselves, right? And yet if we pause for a moment, I don't think it takes usually all that long. We begin to realize that as strong as we may think we are, and as put together as our lives may seem to others to be, we desperately need to be rescued. We are weak. We are broken. We are fallible. we need to be rescued. And as soon as we can acknowledge that truth and begin to receive the rescuing grace and mercy of God, it is then that joy begins to flow. Which is counterintuitive. Do you think? Wait a moment. Whoa. Joy comes by facing my brokenness? Yeah, actually it does. Joy comes by facing our brokenness, by not trying to hide it or push it away or pretend it's not there. When we face it head on, admit that we are broken and receive the healing that comes from the rescuer, then joy begins to just flow through us. So you have this leaf, this thing that we're going to cut out in a moment and we're going to lay it down. If you would choose to do that, we're going to lay it down before we take communion. On the side that you've written rescuer, maybe you could write some more, like I need to be rescued from. Maybe this morning you need to just acknowledge the fact that you need to be rescued. And you're not going to put your name on this, and you don't have to, you know, let go of this thing this morning. If you want to write down something really personal, go for it. No one's going to look at it. You can tuck it away and take it, whatever. But maybe you just need to acknowledge that fact. Maybe you're sitting in a place today where you know that you've been rescued, and you even know what you've been rescued from. You can name it. Like, man, I have struggled with anger. I've had this part of my character that's always gotten the better of me, and God's rescued me from it. Or I've been scared to death of this, or I didn't have what I needed over for this. I mean, who knows? It could be a million things. I'm just going to take a minute. Everybody, I'd encourage you to just jot down one thing, 10 things, 100 things that get at this idea of acknowledging that we've been rescued. And as you start to write down that list, see if joy doesn't start to come because you've been rescued. You've been rescued. So take a minute. Go ahead and talk if you want to share it with a neighbor. Have a conversation. Shout some praise out to each other. I mean, go for it. We're just going to take a minute to write. Go. Maybe it's just a word of gratitude. Thank you. Maybe it's just an expression of love to the rescuer. You can keep writing. Keep thinking about that. Keep jotting down whatever comes to mind. And then I want to flip to the other word, king. Because I think this also, as we consider this word, helps cultivate joy, helps develop joy, is celebrating Jesus as King. Now, King, the idea of kingship, queenship, a monarchy, that probably rubs our American sensibilities the wrong way, you know. Not only does it have something to do with our history, but we look around at the world today, do we not? Even like today, and we see world leaders that are, woohoo, you know, little, or worse, they're maniacal monsters. I mean, we look at these and we think, oh, I don't, kings, queens, is that such a good idea? But of course, for every bad king or queen, monarch, ruler, there were good ones too. And Jesus, of course, is not just a good king. He is the best king. Have you ever thought about how Jesus, who has all of the power in the cosmos, does not lord his power over his people? He doesn't put us under his thumb. He doesn't manipulate us with his power or control us with his power. No, this king uses his power to rescue his people. And when you realize that this king is your king, and when you fall on your knees and serve this king as Mary did, and when you lay down palm branches and worship to this king as the people on the way to Jerusalem did, it's then that joy begins to well up, because you begin to realize we've got it pretty good. We have a king who has our best interest in mind. We have a king who unceasingly loves us. We have a king who lays down his life for us. And so joy begins to bubble up. Now, I know that the idea of surrendering your life, getting on your knees like Mary did before someone, it may seem counterintuitive as a way to cultivate joy, but actually one of the great paradoxes of being a disciple is that there is joy in surrender. If you doubt that this is true, just think about your human relationships for a moment. Have you ever been, can't imagine, have you ever been in a relationship where one of the people was being completely selfish? Anybody ever had that experience? Maybe? Once or twice? This morning? You know? Was it joyful to be in a situation where one person or many people or both of you were trying to get your own way? My hunch is that joy was probably fairly absent. But when there's mutual surrender, it creates this space for joy to, again, well up. Andy and I have been friends for almost 20 years. And I am better for it. I am better for those 20 years of relationship. I've been changed a lot by him. Something interesting, though, has been happening in his life in the last, I don't know, year, 2 years. It's not really all that important. Recently, I've noticed that God has been rescuing him. We're always getting rescued, by the way. It's not just a thing that happens once and then we're done, right? And God's been rescuing him, as God is always rescuing us, but I've just been able to notice it and see it. And one of the things that it has produced is a heart, a posture of surrender. Which, if you know Andy, he would say this, so I'll say it. It's a pretty big deal. And I've seen him not just surrender to me, it's not just personal, although it is that, but I've just seen him in general, like laying down his life, laying down his life, laying down his life, laying down his preferences, laying down his own agenda. Not perfectly, but just surrender has been so evident as I've watched him and the rescuing that God's been doing. And you know what it does? It's so interesting. Every time I see him surrender and lay down his life to someone else, even if it's not to me, I feel joy. It's interesting, isn't it? Even if it's him and you, and I have nothing to do with it, I'm just a witness, it still creates joy in me. And when it does involve me, there's also joy. There's space in our relationship now for this thing to kind of well up. It's interesting, isn't it? How surrender creates joy. And that couldn't be any more true than in our relationship with Jesus. The best king, the perfect king, who laid down his life, who uses his power to serve us. And as we reflect on who this king is, and when we fall at his feet, and when we lay down our lives, our palm branches in worship, joy begins to flow. So, you've got the king, half of the leaf. I want to encourage you to consider writing something. Maybe it's just the choice today to surrender to the king. Maybe you just need to write that down. Like Mary, You're going to fall on your knees and in extravagant worship, pour yourself out. Maybe it's just acknowledging that you serve a good king. Jesus is good. Maybe it's writing down characteristics of Jesus that have been meaningful to you lately. Grace, mercy, patience, kindness. Take a few minutes. Jot something down. And as you do, I'm going to pass out scissors, which I chose to wait to do until the end for the sake of all the children and their fingers involved, and maybe us adults as well. But if you want to cut out your leaf, great. If you want to fold it in half and cut a bunch of lines in it, you'll make a cool little poem, you know, branch, which I don't know how important that is to you, but each row is going to have to share a little bit. We don't have enough for everybody, sad to say. Look around, make sure your neighbor, you know, doesn't need one. Here, why don't you take three? You got a big row. Yep. You have to pass them around. Again, you don't have to cut them out. This is just, if you really want to get extra credit points with God, then you should probably cut it out this morning. Just saying. You know. I have more. Yeah, talk about it with your neighbor. If you're brave and bold, and I hope you are with some of these things, because they're hopefully at least some of these things are celebratory, tell the person next to you what you wrote down. Show them your leaf. Let them share in the joy that you have because of what you've written down and the way that God's been faithful to you. Love it. You're just tearing it. Oh, it's much more. I'm just going to give you guys one. Sorry. Oh, my gosh, Sandy. Good night. Look at you. No surprise. Oh, boy, you guys need two for sure. We're going to come back and circle your way. One for family. And I have glue sticks, and then that's it. So, all right, so here's what we're going to do. Keep cutting. Keep writing. You don't have to stop. We're going to conclude this time by having a party, in a sense, right? And so I want you to take your leaves, and you're welcome to hang on to them and take them home this morning. You're welcome to do that. However, if you'd like, as kind of a living out of this story together and a laying down of our lives, I want to invite you to take your leaf and bring it to one of the tables. There's one in the back too. And before you have communion, just lay it down. Like, it's just a simple act. Again, you don't have to do it. You can take the leaf home if you want to put it on your refrigerator because it's so beautiful. Like, go for it. But maybe one way to respond this morning is to lay your life down. Lay down the joy that you have because of the rescuer and king. We're also obviously have communion. There won't be people serving at these stations, so you're welcome to just come forward at any time here in the next couple of minutes. Break off a piece of bread and dip it in the cup and eat it right there. But often communion for us is solemn and silent. Not today. Today's a party. So it's like talking to the person. Like, you know, bring somebody up with you and go and have it together. It's okay. We don't have to form a single file line. In fact, gather a group of people around a table. Have it together. Serve each other. There's just party. Talk to each other. Lay down your leaves. Let's have this be a moment in which the joy of God is tangible and easy to see among us. Sound good? So keep writing, keep cutting. You've got a couple minutes here. We're going to take like a chunk of time, write, talk, have communion, lay down your leaf, do whatever. Let's let the joy of the Lord be in this place. You totally are allowed to go up there. Absolutely. You can go up there anytime you'd like.
Can yep. I get a piece of bread?
Totally. Yep.
Ready?
What did I do with
it? Now we're going to go take it to communion. Ready?
Yeah, I heard. just so you know, I almost got into a dance competition up on stage there with one of the kiddos, but she didn't quite take up my offer. So next time, maybe. Anyone else interested, let me know. Our hope for you is that today, through music and communion and word, your imagination has been rekindled and your hope has been renewed, and that you are going to leave this place believing more fully who you are, that you're a child of God who's loved, and for that reason, because we have someone who's rescued us, because we have a good king, you can go out of here with joy. So that's our prayer for you this week. May you be people overflowing with joy, so that the world around you tastes and sees and hears that the Lord is good. Amen.